with that.
Okay.
So I'm here with Dulisha Kulasuriya. Did I pronounce that correctly?
That's right.
Great. And you're the managing director. Tell us about your role.
Yes. Yeah. So Center for the Age is a small group at Deloitte. It's based out of San Francisco and Silicon Valley. We have another unit in Amsterdam and another one in Melbourne. And we look at how the world's changing and why it matters and what you do about it. And if you ask our consulting colleagues what drives their behavior, they'll tell you that it's whatever that keeps their clients up at night. Our mandate is slightly different. Our mandate is what should be keeping your clients up at night and how do we bring that to the table. So we look 5 to 10 years out. We frame the perspectives in a way that you can understand it. And then not only do we frame the future in a way that you can understand it, we say, well, given that, what would you do about it today? Mm-hmm. We do three things. We do research, we write papers, we do the research to kind of understand and frame, so we write papers around that. We do eminence, like speaking like this and workshops, and we also do advisory with a select set of clients who'd actually work with them to help with their own transformation.
That's interesting because, you know, I think of Deloitte, coming from a finance background, I think of Deloitte as an audit. Yeah. And you know, large company accountant basically, but it's interesting because we see companies like Deloitte, the traditional Big Four, have been evolving, and then we also see the companies like I'm reading a book right now by Bill Mattisoni on his time at McKinsey, and also BCG, but it's fascinating. Yeah. Because his focus was marketing. Yep. And so he kind of pulled them. Yep. Away from the traditional strategy into a different area. And so now, how important is it for companies, even, you know, you go as a consultant, you tell a company like General Electric or Hire to reinvent itself, but you guys as a company that has been known 20 or 30 years ago, Deloitte, okay, they do. Yep. My audit as a publicly traded company, or they do our taxes for a multinational, but here we are talking about innovation and ways to disrupt and ways to see the future. What, how does that fit into. Yeah. the core DNA of a company like Deloitte?
It's a very common misconception that we are still an audit and tax firm. Those were our roots. Mm-hmm. We did start off as an audit firm over 100 years ago, and in most geographies, that's still kind of what we are known for. Now in the US, in Europe, and Australia, our consulting firm is dominant by far. At this point, consulting makes more money than all the other businesses combined.
Okay.
So it's very dominant. And beyond consulting, we have many other edges, like the Center for the Edge. We have a practice on blockchain. We have a practice on the future of work. We have a practice. All these different edges that are relevant to everything here at the Singularity Summit. I mean, our partnership with Singularity itself is an example of that, where the other guys aren't. So we recognize that we too need to evolve, and a big part of the evolution is kind of pushing the boundary, pushing the edge of what it is. And I think the marketplace is coming to realize that Deloitte is more than audit firm. But you know, I think for Columbia, we had to do something like this for them to say, wow, I didn't know you guys did that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. And especially in a place like Columbia, and I don't know how familiar you are with the country.
Not enough, unfortunately.
Oh, is this your first time here?
It's my first time here. I've been reading a lot. I mean, before I came, this orange economy thing is very interesting. I've done very relevant work for that in the U.S., but I'm learning more.
I live in Medellin, and Medellin it works very hard to position itself, or has the aspiration to be like the Silicon Valley of South America, or of the, you know, and it's fascinating because you have San Jose, California, and then San Jose, Costa Rica has had some.
Yep.
Success, a.
Yep.
Lot of success actually.
Yep.
And then so Medellin is really trying to. Yep. Be the new version. There's a lot of fascinating things there happening.
Santiago, Chile also has some, done some really well in some of those aspects.
Absolutely. You spoke about how a lot of company, or too many people, traditionally depend on the resume or old traditional.
Yes.
Qualifications. And I think that's fascinating, especially in Colombia. If you spend time here, you'll see it's a very traditional.
Yes.
Country. It's a very...
I went and spoke at Deloitte yesterday, and I was the only male not wearing a tie.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, especially in Bogota. Bogota is extremely...
And I was definitely the only person with a mohawk. Well, I'm the only partner at Deloitte with a mohawk.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And that would be very hard to come up through the ranks with in a place like Colombia. A lot of times you'll go and you'll see introductions and to a speaker, and they'll spend 5 minutes reading out what university and what they did and this.
It's a qualification for you up there.
And you see something like back in the States, you can see somebody, so you might be a great programmer, for example. Well, how'd you learn Python? Oh, I taught myself. You know, we've got a friend visiting right now in Medellin. I had to leave him to come here, but he's been a CTO. He lives in California. He's been a CTO for several companies that have been clients of ours, and his whole career has been in IT and in software. But his degree's in music.
Yeah.
And it would be very, very difficult for somebody to do that here in Colombia. And I think that as they can shake that.
Yeah.
They can accelerate, and you see that need for...
Absolutely. So in all of these places, we had to break the cultural norms. Mm-hmm. So that is no different from what I'm talking about, an organization and having to do something different, right? And having the conviction and the courage to do something different. Once you find one or two examples, if you shine the spotlight on them, then more people feel that they have permission to try something as well.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I have this mohawk is kind of for that reason. There's a festival called Burning Man. Actually, mm-hmm. in the next building, they have a whole thing of...
A lot of people here know about Burning Man. I've got a friend from Cartagena who goes to Burning Man every year.
Yeah, well, they had a whole jungle mm-hmm. thing, right? So I go to Burning Man every year, and I'd shave a mohawk for the festival because that's what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I could be myself and do, you know, be that for that week. Mm-hmm. But I come back, shave it back, go bald, mm-hmm. and then it'll grow back its hair, right? Not a big deal. One year, I kept it a little longer than that, and... this lady walked up to me and said, thank you. And I said, for what? And I said, she said, well, I don't know if you noticed, but I'm wearing this nose ring.
Mm-hmm.
You don't. It's a tiny little thing.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, well, I would take it off during the week and only wear it on weekends because I didn't think it was appropriate. Then I see you walking around the mohawk, and it made me feel okay to bring my whole self out to work.
Mm-hmm.
So what I realized was inadvertently I had created a sphere of permission for others to be themselves. So I kind of took that to the next level. So even... I have an office, but I don't sit in the office. I sit in the bullpen with all of the younger colleagues so that I can also learn from them and they can learn from us. And I'm also in their day-to-day so that, you know, we can interact more and we can have a normal conversation so we can actually talk about it and not from a hierarchical way. I go to work in a hoodie.
Mm-hmm.
I go to work in jeans and a hoodie because we always had this thing of dress to the level of a client. Well, what do you think people at Facebook and Google and all the startups wear? They're not wearing suits and ties. It's a different world, right? And you realize like that stuff is very superficial. It's not what matters. So what you need in Colombia, and it'll happen over time, are more examples of people who are doing things differently. You'll need that startup, Rappi or something else, that suddenly becomes, oh, so I don't have to go join a large corporation. I can do this and be successful mm-hmm. too. You need someone who's kind of flamboyant in some way to showcase that and be successful. And that they can. So you need alternate models to succeed in order for others to have permission to do so as well.
Right, right. I think that's fascinating. Now, we look at scale, and we look at one of the things you talked about, disrupting at the edge, and you know, that reminded me of the book, The Innovator's Dilemma, which is a very popular book in Silicon Valley. And there are cases of how when you have a company that's very large, like a General Electric or like an IBM,
a Kodak,
right. And so what happens is that sometimes there are business reasons why they can't necessarily bet the whole company on something, but the right thing is to go and exactly to spend something to disrupt yourself, eat your children, and it's fascinating because I wonder how. That can apply to countries that are medium-sized economies. Colombia just entered the OECD. They're growing and advancing. The basic infrastructure is here. I mean, fiber optic and 4G and all that stuff is here. But still, there's a lot of catch-up that they're playing. And how can they leverage that to be able to either leapfrog or to grow more quickly?
So a few things. One is you do need the technological infrastructure. And mm-hmm. if you're saying that's already there, that's great, right? That's mm-hmm. because that gives everyone access and ability to get involved in the digital economy. That's the first one. The second one is play to your strengths. Go back and look and say, like, what are we traditionally good at?
Mm-hmm.
And it can't be just oil and minerals.
Right.
Right, because that's a very, like, that is not going to sustain yourself. So that's why I really like the orange economy, because it goes with the creative, the making stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Third, it's really a cultural shift. It's a cultural mind shift. Like it is kind of shifting from a fear-based or a scarcity, zero-sum game mindset to an abundance mind that we can do more. Now, one of the, you use the word leapfrog, right? One of the things that a lot of countries I think do wrong is they try to emulate another one and say, we want to be the Silicon Valley of this, or they try to emulate that. And the thing is, you're never going to catch up to Silicon Valley. Mm-hmm. And you're never going to catch up to China. Right? That's too far ahead.
Right.
But if you were to do things differently, working on your local strengths, that can be very different. So a good example is this. Work a lot with manufacturing, the manufacturing sector and the manufacturing stuff. And I've written a couple of papers on the maker movement. Have you heard of the maker movement?
Absolutely.
Yes, maker movement, right? So in that context, we see the manufacturing world fragmenting into, like breaking into two things, right?
Mm-hmm.
The manufacturing industry is going to fragment and consolidate. The large companies that do manufacturing today are getting bigger and bigger. They're going to consolidate, they're going to buy others, and they're going to get bigger and bigger. And they will use less labor and more robots.
Right.
But we also see the other part where the last mile of manufacturing will fragment. The last mile of manufacturing will fragment, and that's where most of the labor is going to be. So to put this in context, the generic product will be made at scale,
mm-hmm.
but it'll be customized to your need, my need, or niche needs by the local population. And that's where the labor is going to be, and that's where the creative community comes together, that's where the maker movement comes together. So the work I'm doing with GE, the example I gave, one of the things I did with them is, you know the dorm refrigerator, the mini refrigerator?
Yeah.
Nobody has done anything with that for 60 years.
Right.
It's been the same product literally for 60 years. But what if you take the same product, keep the refrigeration part exactly the same, because
mm-hmm.
that's what's important, the compressor, but make the top and the front, that is dumb plastic,
right,
and make it hot swappable with a little electric connectivity, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it gets shipped with the plastic on top, you can pull it out and put something in, is electric connectivity. And they know it, all the third parties, everyone, to say, design what you want with
it. It's a platform.
It's a platform, right?
Wow.
It's a product as a platform. Now, if you do that, in every college, there'll be one kid who says, I'm going to, you know, laser cut a beautiful acrylic with the college colors.
Mm-hmm.
And you can buy it and put it on there, right? And it'll light up and all that stuff.
Okay, so you
GE
can customize.
GE will never do that.
Right, right.
Because GE can, you know, produce 100 units. But this kid is going to pay for his college tuition by doing that.
Fascinating.
And someone else might build a charging pad. Another one might build a projector on the ceiling. The thing is, GE does not have to imagine the 1,000 different ways, nor know all the niche markets, because someone closer to the market can do that. Someone closer to that last mile can do that.
Right, because there's a local need or a local particular, something unique.
This is what product
and you can
platform.
Take that as, and because it's a platform,
yes.
you can adapt it.
And this goes to everything from kind of pure window dressing
mm-hmm.
to utility. So you could take a food product and just customize the packaging to be local and language relevant. By size, I mean, they used to do it in size because people couldn't afford the large packets, so they break into small, like 1 rupee packets in India.
Okay.
Right, they do stuff like that. So there's a lot to be done in this last mile that people are just ignoring here.
One of the things I never saw, and then I realized after I lived here, why they do it, because they have, you can go into the corner store and buy like a single serving
yeah.
pack of shampoo,
yeah.
for example,
absolutely.
And because people are buying things in micro purchases.
Because they couldn't
like
afford
that.
To buy the big one. They could afford to buy the $1 one. That was something they did 20, 30 years ago. But here's another example. One of the photographers here is Mauro.
Mm-hmm.
I met him last night. He's an amazing photographer. He does nature nightscapes, really hard stuff to do with natural light.
Right.
Beautiful stuff. But he doesn't know what to do with it. It's his hobby. It's his passion, right?
Mm-hmm.
His options are Instagram,
right,
which is proliferated by good and bad,
right,
or gallery, which is a few people who are kingmakers.
And a barrier of entry, yeah, the barrier of entry
right?
is high.
Nothing in between.
Right.
Now, the two hotels I stayed at, the Hilton and the Hyatt,
mm-hmm.
they have very generic pictures. Why would the Hyatt not say, we have 12 floors, every floor we're going to invite a photographer to come furnish it?
Win-win.
And have a story attached to it, and have a person. Suddenly, my stay in that room is much more Colombian and not a generic Hyatt that could have been anywhere in the world.
Exactly, exactly.
Right? So there are all these little things that we can do that we're ignoring because we're so enamored of replicating Silicon Valley.
One of the things you mentioned that's interesting to me, and you've been so generous with your time, but like how they have the micro purchases here in a place like India, is you know, in Colombia, one of the things that it struggles with is inequality, and they just, you know, right after you went off, the next person came on to talk about the Bronx, which is a very infamous neighborhood here in Medellin, that they are at least are now making some, doing some innovative things there. But in Medellin, for example, the city, there's actually a couple in the city, and then Ruta Inn has maker labs.
Okay.
And so what the city itself has done is said, look, we know that most people cannot afford a 3D printer.
Yeah.
But we're going to, and they actually put them not in horrible neighborhoods, but kind of in, I call them popular neighborhoods.
It's a gym for makers.
Yeah, and anybody can come in. You're a student, or you, because before, you know, back in the States, we had, you know, garages, and we'd experiment in our garages, and Apple and HP were starting in garages. But this is, and people here, most people don't have garages in popular neighborhoods. So, but this gives you a chance to come in, and they have, because it's the city that's doing it, they have all these high-tech machines and the really good stuff. And you can go in there, and it's free, but if you are have like a small scale commercial project, like you're a startup, they'll say, okay, then here's like a nominal fee because it's a commercial thing, but you can use it to get started until you can go off and get your own.
Absolutely.
And it's, so it's fascinating how things, you see these things and these innovations taking place down here. One last question for you. Is how significant is because one of the areas where I think that a lot still needs to be done in places like this, because you're going to have the, you know, from the haves and have-nots going to the nos and nos-nots, is the role of talent. And we look about how everybody's, and I think it's overblown, but people say RPA is going to take, it's going to change jobs, it but is. You know, you're not going to get to a zero employment, I don't think.
It's society. Not zero employment, but it is something that we have to take really, really seriously, because a lot of the jobs we do is going to go away. And that goes back to the previous thing. We can't focus on trying to get a big manufacturing facility set up, because the newer one, every single new one, is going to use more automation robots, and the people that they need to hire are going to be higher skilled and not the people that you need to get jobs.
My best friend back home in the States is a CPA. She's a senior level CPA. And we were talking about this, and she said that now, for the senior people, you know, to sign off on audits or things like that, they're relatively secure. But she said the pyramid's getting steeper, meaning that the entry level, the things that she did 15 years ago, are automated now.
No, I mean, the our audit practice is going to get decimated over the next decade, because most of what we do physically on paper, it's only done because of regulation.
How do companies like Caribbean countries, Colombia, Latin American countries, Trinidad, Jamaica, India's already well ahead in IT, but how do countries that are trying, like I said, leapfrogs, how do they not just defend against that, but take advantage of it?
So I think one of the things you have to work on is that the digital economy doesn't always mean digital products.
Mm-hmm.
And coding and all of that. There's some part of the population is going to go do that. But the other part of the population, I mean, you can't make a coal miner a coder.
Right.
That's a false statement. A few people did that, but that doesn't apply for most. But you can work on the creative economy, right? This is where the physical making of things. So it's much more sustainable for people to start a small business and to maintain that without any massive growth implication. Not everyone has to try to be a Facebook or an Airbnb, right? Majority of people, we should create platforms, digital platforms, this is where the digital comes in, to enable them to do all of this, right? So that they can get the word out more, they can get a global marketplace buying them, not just selling at the market, right?
Right.
It's all of that where the digital can help the population, because that's where the labor is going to be, that's where the jobs are going to be. For a good portion of the population, because you're not going to be able to upgrade them all to become engineers and coders.
Right.
Some part of the population who are already ready might be able to do that. But for the rest of them, create the platforms so you can do more. And again, it's sometimes simple stuff. Just like the photographs at like the hotel room idea, all the soaps and shampoos are just some generic something somewhere, right?
Right.
It should be a local company using local herbs or something, making something with a story.
We have wax palms. We have so many different
exactly,
exotic
right?
fruits down here, things I never heard of before until I moved
so
down here.
So the whole tourism industry, the whole small culture, like going local, organic, all of that, like buying local, like small scaling everything is where most of the labor is going to be.
And the new economy doesn't require like the traditional economy, like giant capital investments, no, like in factories, it's knowledge.
Right, and the platforms, the digital platforms, can help them do what they do better, cheaper, so mm-hmm. they can actually sustain themselves. So in terms of, because you can keep educating and training people, but you won't be able to compete against IIT in India or right. against Silicon Valley or MIT. I mean, all of MIT's courseware is available for free.
Mm-hmm.
That hasn't changed a thing.
So people here can take advantage of that and make things with it. Right, right.
But that only so many people, one, will know, will have the aptitude, and will have the community to do something with that.
I mean, I buy our team. I buy them courses on Udemy.
Yeah.
You know, and I say, hey, if you want to, or Amazon right. gives us free courses, and so that counts. But I think that, and in the U.S., I know that it counts. I can say I know how to program
C++.
Yeah. Well, just here, take this test. Okay, you know what? I don't care where you learned it.
Yeah.
Come and get to work. You know, here they're like, well, did you get a degree in CIS? Did you come from this university?
Well,
and I think that
we had to shift the mentality that
yes.
the path out is employment.
Because mm-hmm.
you only get those questions if you're going to be employed by
right.
someone else. If you're self-employed,
mm-hmm.
it's not an issue, right?
Down here, even the banks ask you to do a loan application, actually.
That's why you need new models. That's why you need peer-to-peer funding.
Mm-hmm.
That's
why,
so the new models of a democratic system that is not reliant on the old institutions is what you need.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the peer-to-peer funding, the tech shop kind of things. Government has a big role to play, and this is why I'm really excited about the orange economy, because they can change the rules.
Right.
They can change the taxation. They can change. They can create economic zones. They can create essentially sandboxes,
mm-hmm.
right, to test new things and test new ideas.
And supporting the quality of education, which
yeah.
is a big. Which I think here you have some really good schools,
right.
but then you have a bunch of really awful schools. And you might, you could take somebody and say, I'm going to give you a free scholarship
yeah.
to this good university, and you're going to get in there, but you haven't been properly prepared. I mean, we have the same
right.
problem some places in the U.S.
But you can
too.
Also change rules to say, like, every large corporate, so in the U.S., in certain cities, these are city
mm-hmm.
laws, if you're building a new building,
mm-hmm.
there has to be so much public space and green space.
Hmm.
Right? You have to give back to, because you're taking up space in the city, you have to give back to something in the city. So there has to be artworks, green space. So the same way, you could have a regulation that every corporation has to give back to their people.
What they do here that's interesting is they have like a national community college system called SENA, S-E-N-A. And so we're an employer, and so for every 15 employees that we have on the payroll, we must hire one intern.
Yep, something like that.
And that's already
yeah.
well established. And
or like make training be part of what's required,
mm-hmm.
even for like a cleaner in a hotel.
Mm-hmm.
Like give them training. So essentially, don't keep them in that job forever. Elevate their give them access to Udemy or something else. Give them access to something more.
Right, right, exactly.
But I think the answer out of this is less employed by a large company
mm-hmm.
and much more self-employment. And small medium businesses.
I agree.
And that's a different shift because everyone is trying to attract the big companies to set up here or to build the next Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to have that too, but it's only part of the story.
Right.
That story and that narrative is taking over everything else when we're ignoring some of the easy things that we can do.
You've been so generous with your time. Thanks.
Of course.
You know,